Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we continue this hour with our special coverage of the killing of Osama bin Laden. Later this hour, a very special guest, Lawrence Wright, author of the book, The Looming Tower, and the play, My Trip to Al-Qaeda, a New Yorker correspondent who made knowing everything there is to know about bin Laden and Al-Qaeda his mission after 9/11. But first, let's do the blow-by-blow of how they got bin Laden yesterday, from President Obama ordering a new effort to the initial clues to his actual whereabouts in a mansion, not a cave, to the burial of his body today at sea, itself raising some questions. And as we keep replaying portions of the president's speech last night, because we know many of you were not up that late, it was after 11:30 when he actually came out, here's the excerpt, this is about a minute and a half, where he tells part of the story himself.
Well, shortly after taking office, I directed Leon Panetta, the director of the CIA, to make the killing or capture of bin Laden the top priority of our war against Al-Qaeda, even as we continued our broader efforts to disrupt, dismantle, and defeat his network. Then, last August, after years of painstaking work by our intelligence community, I was briefed on a possible lead to bin Laden. It was far from certain, and it took many months to run this thread to ground. I met repeatedly with my national security team as we developed more information about the possibility that we had located bin Laden hiding within a compound deep inside Pakistan. And finally, last week, I determined that we had enough intelligence to take action and authorized an operation to get Osama bin Laden and bring him to justice. Today, at my direction, the United States launched a targeted operation against that compound in Abbottabad, Pakistan. A small team of Americans carried out the operation with extraordinary courage and capability. No Americans were harmed. They took care to avoid civilian casualties. After a firefight, they killed Osama bin Laden and took custody of his body.
And we now know they dumped the body at sea, and that's one of the things that we'll talk about right now, President Obama from his speech last night. And joining us now with more on how they got bin Laden is Bobby Ghosh. He's the deputy international editor for Time Magazine, former Baghdad bureau chief, and much more for Time and Time.com. Hiya, Bobby. Welcome back to WNYC.
Glad to be back.
How far back should we begin? Let's do a little kind of, you know, preamble here with President Bush and the first attempt to capture bin Laden after 9/11. Was there a point where the trail went cold, or when Bush made a conscious decision to pull resources from the hunt for bin Laden to concentrate on Iraq?
Well, I think the trail went cold pretty quickly after he escaped from Tora Bora, the mountains in Afghanistan. And after that,
that's like December 2001, is that when?
That's about that's about right. After that, it was always hearsay. It was always somebody said they'd seen bin Laden here, somebody said they'd seen bin Laden there, but there was very little solid evidence. One thing we learned today, that regardless of where the majority of U.S. troops may have been in the region, if the U.S. had solid intelligence, they always had the capability to mount the sort of operation that happened yesterday. So, you know, they could have sent in the SEALs and the CIA into Pakistan or anywhere in Afghanistan at pretty much any point. They never really had the solid intelligence that they needed for that. There were a few red herrings. There were a few occasions when there's been some reporting that suggests that SEAL teams went into places expecting to find high-value targets, maybe Osama himself, but it turned out the intelligence was not as solid as they had hoped. This particular location in Abbottabad, they were, I think our reporting now suggests that they began to suspect last August, in the middle of last summer.
Hang on, I don't want to get there yet. We're going to get there.
Sorry.
But
okay.
Just to stay on the kind of prehistory of this a little bit, September 11th happened. obviously 2001 in September. The very next month, U.S. troops were deployed to Afghanistan, with President Bush saying he wanted to take Osama bin Laden dead or alive. This is what Bush was saying by March 13th, 6 months later, March 13th, 2002, when the trail had apparently gone cold.
I wouldn't necessarily say he's at the center of any command structure. And, you know, again, I don't know where he is. I repeat what I said. I truly am not that concerned about him. I know he is on the run. I was concerned about him when he had taken over a country.
By which he meant Afghanistan. So, Bobby, just again, before we put a ribbon on this, you know, and send it into history for this conversation, because a lot of our listeners are bringing it up, that Bush started going after Osama bin Laden, started with wanted dead or alive, public enemy number one, all that Wild West talk, and then decided by 2002, no, let's really devote our resources to get Saddam Hussein instead. And by that clip we just played from March 2002, Bush is downplaying the importance of getting Osama bin Laden, perhaps to cover himself politically because they weren't finding him, or because perhaps they were on the verge of a different policy decision. Just anything else you would say about that as a choice made in Washington at that time or not?
Well, it was clear. You're absolutely right. Once a decision had been made high up to go to Iraq, then they needed to come up with the right kind of language to explain to the American people why the U.S. forces were no longer sort of focusing on Osama bin Laden. But there is another side to this, which is that the moment he sort of moved across the border into Pakistan, it was no longer going to be a U.S. military operation, no mm-hmm. matter how many troops you had in Afghanistan. You were not going to be able to send them across the border to get Osama bin Laden. It from the moment he crossed over to Pakistan, it became essentially an intelligence operation, and that meant working with the Pakistani ISI. That meant working with a partner that we now know was not always reliable, and was not always giving the U.S. The information that was usable, the right kind of information. And we now learn that he was a kilometer away from the Pakistani equivalent of West Point.
So President Obama comes into office, and the way he tells it in the clip from last night, he ordered the CIA director, Leon Panetta, to make the killing or capture of Osama bin Laden once again the number one priority in the war on terror. How literally do you take that phrase? It was in the clip that we just played. The number one priority in the war on terror, that as opposed to keeping us safe from attack as the top priority?
There was always an element in the CIA whose only job was to find Osama bin Laden. I think that, you know, that kind of language, number one priority and so on, is for a political audience. I don't think that anybody in the CIA ever thought that that looking for Osama bin Laden was less than the most important thing.
So we have the Bush rhetoric and we have the Obama rhetoric. And the president mentioned a possible lead from last August. You also were going to talk about August. What happened last August?
Well, I think they began, you know, the intelligence about from within Pakistan has been getting better and better for a couple of years now. And my understanding is that process began when the U.S. stopped believing everything that the ISI told them and began to create their own information gathering networks within Pakistan. What I understand now, what our reporting tells us now, is that at some point middle of last summer, around August, attention focused in on this particular town and this particular compound. It was an odd place to be looking for Osama bin Laden. It's the Westchester of Islamabad. It's where wealthy Pakistanis live, tree-lined and at a slight altitude, so it's cooler than Islamabad in the summer. And there is a very, very large Pakistani military presence there. There's a base, as I said. There is a military academy, which is probably the best military academy in Pakistan. So it's hardly the place you would expect Osama bin Laden to be hiding.
Of ISI, the Pakistani intelligence services, involvement in this one way or the other. You have the fact, as you say, that he was hiding out very close to the Pakistani equivalent of West Point, which might indicate that the military there was complicit in hiding him. But on the other hand, the fact that the U.S. had to come this deep into Pakistan to get him once they figured out where he was kind of indicates that the ISI may have been involved or complicit in going to get him. What does the evidence show on one side or the other?
It's a tricky one. To get that deep in, as you're exactly right, to get that deep into Pakistani airspace meant that it would have had to be signed off on by people high up in the Pakistani military. What exactly the ISI's role was, we'll probably learn in the next few days. But keep something in mind. As my colleague Aaron Baker, who was our bureau chief in Islamabad for several years, tells me, if she had a guest for dinner, the ISI knew within minutes. So the notion that Osama bin Laden was hiding in that place without any attention beggars belief.
And when you say to fly that deep into Pakistan airspace, was this an airborne mission at any level? Who went in? How did they go in? How many CIA agents? How many Navy SEALs? What do we know?
Well, I don't have the exact numbers, but we know at least three helicopters were involved, that it was a joint Navy SEAL CIA operation. The information we're receiving now says that the Navy SEALs essentially pulled the trigger on Osama bin Laden. They went through several rooms in the house, and when they finally found him, despite all the legends that we heard over the years that he had a special bodyguard whose job was to kill Osama bin Laden if there was any danger of capture, turns out that was not true. Clearly did he have if he had an exploding vest, he certainly didn't detonate it. They shot him in the head and killed him.
He never apparently had the stomach to be a suicide bomber himself.
No, something that he was quite happy to have hundreds and hundreds of young people around the world do at his bidding, but he didn't have the courage to do that himself.
And so this morning, after the president spoke last night, they're saying bin Laden was shot in the left eye. Do we know by whom or under what very specific circumstances at that moment? We're also hearing the word firefight. How much are they saying?
Not very much. There was a firefight. It didn't last very long. Although the entire operation seemed to have sort of gone on for about 40 minutes, the actual shooting was done pretty quickly. As I understand, the agents and the SEALs went from room to room. When they found bin Laden, it was a bit of a surprise. They were not expecting to see him in that particular room. Again, I don't have the exact details. I know there are a lot of people in the U.S. who would love to know the name of the agent or the SEAL who actually pulled the trigger. I don't know if that information will ever be released.
Really? You don't think we're going to see a rollout with a Medal of Honor or something?
Sure the whole team will receive lots of commendations and awards. Whether they name the individual, I'm skeptical that that will happen.
All right, let's take a break, and we're going to open the phones for Bobby Ghosh, the deputy international editor for Time Magazine, who's covering the actual operation against Osama bin Laden. I know a lot of you have questions, so we can take any questions for Bobby Ghosh on this at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post your comments or questions to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, and we will certainly talk about the burial of Osama bin Laden's body at sea. Some people saying, habeas corpus, show us the body. Why did they dump it at sea or bury it at sea, to put it a little more delicately? And how is that done in what the U.S. is calling a proper Muslim burial at sea? Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Bobby Ghosh, deputy international editor for Time Magazine, as we talk about the actual raid, how they got bin Laden. And let's take a phone call. John at the Jersey Shore, you're on WNYC. Unless, John, you're in the show Jersey Shore. Which is it?
I'm sorry. I am at the Jersey Shore.
Okay, you're not in the show Jersey Shore.
Oh, good Lord, no. I just wanted to say it seems a huge mistake to dump the body at sea. I want to know what your guest thinks about that. That's obviously the the culmination of events here, but tell me this isn't going to give rise to right-wing conspiracy theorists equivalent of birthers saying, well, we don't have the body. It was, you know, if a video goes out on YouTube, they're going to say it's a fake and, you know, all that. That's crazy. And one comment, I have to give the president a ton of credit for just last week. You know, he had this press conference about the birth certificate, knowing that they knew where bin Laden was. He probably knew they were days away from going in and getting him. And yet he, you know, kept a straight face about all this nonsense. And I give him a lot of credit.
Thank you very much. Well, you can imagine how much anybody involved with intelligence at that level keeps a straight face every day about one thing or another. But still, Bobby Ghosh, tell us about this burial at sea. And we already have a comment on our website, somebody saying, I want to see the long-form death certificate.
Well, look, there are several issues here. We'll know for certain in the next few days, but some of the reporting that my colleagues in D.C. are picking up is that they did ask the Saudi government if they would take the body. Keep in mind that there are very few countries in the world at this point that will be willing to take the body and willing to be the burial site of Osama bin Laden, because that has consequences that are easy to imagine. So it would not be easy to find a place where you can keep the body. I'm sure photographs are taken. I'm sure there is video. I'm sure there was DVD. I beg your pardon. There is DNA information that's already available. And you know what? Within days, Al-Qaeda will themselves announce the death of Osama bin Laden. And hopefully that'll lay all this to rest. Will there be a small faction of people who will continue to believe that he's still alive? Yes, they will. But I don't think we can worry about that too much. There are always going to be people like that. And frankly, even if you produced a body, there would be people who say that it was fake. There's still people who believe Saddam Hussein is alive. Only 2 weeks ago in Iraq, there was a supposed phone conversation that took place with a still alive Saddam Hussein and a member of parliament, and that went viral in the Arab world for about 24 hours, and then it died out. That sort of nonsense will happen from time to time, but I think pretty soon now you will hear an acknowledgement from Al-Qaeda announcing that, in their terms, the Sheikh is dead.
Why? Well, maybe there'll be a DVD and DNA. What kind of video do you think we'll actually be seeing of the body?
You know, if you think back to the bodies of Osama, I beg your pardon, the bodies of al-Zarqawi in Iraq, the bodies of Saddam's sons Uday and Qusay after they were killed, it's grim stuff. But I'm sure the video was taken and photographs were taken, and in due course they will turn up, probably not too long.
Edward in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Edward.
Hello.
Hi, Edward.
Yeah, how are you?
All right, thanks.
Basically, you answered my second question pretty much detail, because I figured that the body wouldn't be one of, nobody would really want to claim his body, as far as it would set up a shrine or a place to be retaliated in, because a physical body is there. But just one question. I was involved in the military, and basically, I just wanted to know from your guest, were there ever at any time, as far as to his knowledge, where it was considered to actually take him alive? Because personally, I would have preferred if he was taken alive and forced to stand trial to answer some questions, and it would have been much better for the Obama administration, in my personal belief, as far as internationally, to show that this is a nation of laws and justice. And he would be made to answer, especially for the families of people who lost their lives in the tragedy.
Edward, thank you. That's a great question about why didn't they try to take him alive. Let me get somebody in here who I think is going to make a similar point, and then we'll get an answer from Bobby Ghosh. Eddie in Flushing, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yes, it's not exactly a similar point, but I was just wondering, my understanding was that Osama was at the number one of the FBI's top 10 list, and that they had a $10 million reward for his capture. So I'm curious how that's going to be settled.
Okay, thank you very much. And by the way, Eddie and Bobby, everybody else who makes the Osama Obama tongue slip today gets a pass for one day. they get a pass on saying Obama when they meant to say Osama or the other way around. Some people do it on purpose, as we know, but today everybody gets a pass. So first, to the first caller's question, this was not an operation that was intended to take him dead or alive. This was an operation that was solely intended to kill him, correct?
I don't know that. I don't know that for sure. Going way back to the quote that you were referring earlier, George Bush did say dead or alive. I don't know for a fact that the SEALs and the CIA had specific instructions on this operation to kill rather than capture.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible that he had a gun in his hand, that he often is seen with a gun in his hand. It's possible that he threatened to shoot and that they had to shoot him.
And on the larger question that Eddie raises about whether it's
a good question. It's a question that, you know, frequently as journalists we have frequently addressed that question. Would it have been better for him to be taken alive? And the risk, of course, is that then that gives him a public platform, that gives him a world stage from which he can continue to spew the hateful nonsense that he did so much of his life.
You don't kill somebody just so they can't say something, right?
Yeah, I doubt that was the reason they killed him. My suspicion is that they killed him because he had a weapon in his hand and was probably likely to use it.
And to the caller from Flushing's question about the $10 million reward, is that a real reward?
I'm sure. Oh, absolutely, it's a real reward. We will never, and we should never hear who gets it, because that person's life would not be worth living if the name got out.
Right.
But I'm hoping that even as we speak, somebody has been identified who will be receiving that money and perhaps will move with his family to some very nice suburb in the United States.
That wouldn't be for the same Navy SEAL who shot him in the eye. That would be for somebody who provided the intelligence.
I believe so. I don't think as I said, people in this particular operation will receive commendations, and I'm not clear whether they receive financial reward. But the reward money, the FBI reward money, would go to the person who delivered the intelligence that made this operation possible.
To some lucky and courageous Pakistani. By the way, from our comments page, someone going by Devil in the Details just posted, Brian Lehrer just said they dumped the body at sea. So which is it? Burial at sea because they wanted to follow the 24-hour burial strictures of Islamic practice, or they dumped the body at sea? So dumped is really the wrong word.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they gave the body the burial that Muslim ritual requires. I don't think they just tossed it over the side of an aircraft carrier.
Deborah in Suffolk County, you're on WNYC. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Brian. I have a question, a little unrelated. It's about how come it took so long to figure out for our government to figure out that the Pakistani government and intelligence agencies were totally unreliable, and that this guy was cooling his heels in some comfy place in Pakistan. I said that to my husband years ago, that we're not going to find him in a cave. We're going to find him at Motel 6.
This is better than Motel 6, you could say.
Well, you know what I mean.
You know,
or he was going to get room service and be very comfortable.
This is more of Marriott than Days Inn, if you know
exactly.
what I mean.
Exactly.
So what about that, Bobby? Now we're hearing that phrase. Did it came from the president's lips, a mansion, not a cave?
Well, it certainly was a mansion. We don't know how long he's been there. We think he's been there for at least a year. It's certainly true that between 2001 and, let's say, 2010, there were various periods where he was sleeping rough in a cave or out in the field somewhere. But I never bought the idea that he was sort of permanently in a cave somewhere. My suspicion has always been that he was being sheltered in some comfort, perhaps not quite the comfort that we've seen now, but in that he was being sheltered in some comfort. In an urban place. you know, to answer the question, the U.S. Has known for a long time that Pakistan has been playing a double game, but it's a situation where the U.S. didn't have very many options. You play the cards you're dealt. The ISI is a particular kind of organization which has very different priorities from the United States, and the tricky game that the CIA has had to play for a very long time is to try and get little pieces of genuine information in the middle of a lot of fake information, and that's probably why it's taken this long.
Jay in Morristown, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jay.
Hi. I was curious if the guest knew anything more about the military aspects of the operation. Clearly, it really struck me this morning watching the coverage that the Pakistani government had absolutely no idea that the raid was coming and seemed to have no idea that the helicopter had come and gone by the time the operation was announced, which to me would have required an incredible amount of sophistication. I was just curious to discuss that a bit.
Well, I'm afraid I don't have any more information than that's out there at the moment. I can say that I'm skeptical that the Pakistani government didn't have any idea that something was going on. As I said earlier, I'm thinking that's at least an hour's flight, if not more, from the border with Afghanistan. Three American helicopters don't fly an hour over Pakistani territory without somebody somewhere in the Pakistani military knowing. They may not have known that Osama was the target. They may have been told that this was a high-value target of some kind. But I would be very, very surprised if it were true that nobody at all in the Pakistani military knew.
Jay, thank you. And with that, we leave it with Bobby Ghosh, Deputy International Editor for Time Magazine. Bobby, thanks for doing the blow-by-blow with us of how they got bin Laden. Thank you very much.
Anytime, Brian. Thanks.
And obviously more details yet to come. These will come out gradually over the coming days, no doubt. Our next very special guest coming up after a break, Lawrence Wright, who has written about Osama bin Laden for The New Yorker magazine, and maybe you know his 2006 Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Looming Tower, Al-Qaeda and the Road to 9/11, and his play, My Trip to Al-Qaeda. We will talk to Lawrence Wright about the even bigger picture about what bin Laden's death might mean for Al-Qaeda and the war on terror generally. Stay with us.